What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that helps the podcast keep on going. And with me, as always, is Derek. What's up, Derek?
Yo, what's up, Bob?
How are you enjoying your Sunday?
It's pretty good. It's nice. Nice, mostly sunny day.
Good weather, at least for me, all weekend as well. So yeah. It's hard to stay inside and do these podcasts, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But we'll just jump right into it this week. We have two products that we took a look at, and both of them, I would say, are very interesting. So the first one is the HP S700 Pro 512 gigabyte solid state drive. And if you think about HP, that's not a company you associate with high performance products, especially in solid state drives. You know, HP is a huge consumer brand, but when it comes to enthusiasts, we don't really look at HP products at all.
Yeah, when it comes to HP, it's not really a brand I consider.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever owned an HP product. Oh no, yes, I have. I have their printers. Back in the day when their printers were like huge, like I had an HP printer. But I think that's about it. I don't think I've ever owned anything else HP. But so they came out with these new solid state drives, and the way that HP's solid state drive business works is they allow other companies to manufacture the drives, but they have to pass through HP to be branded as HP technically.
Right.
Which is good, because you don't want some other company putting your name on their product and then it'd be crap.
Of course.
You know, and this drive basically has the same components inside as many other high-end, high-performance solid-state drives out there. It has the SMI SM2258 controller and Micron 3D TLC NAND. So that's like pretty much any company, right, that doesn't make their own controller or their own NAND, this is like what's inside all of the mainstream 2.5 inch solid state drives. So just with that, it gives it a really good starting point, right?
Yeah.
And then what HP has done is they made their own custom firmware for it, which if you've been following solid state drives for any amount of time, you know good firmware will make or break a drive. If you just put the stock components on it and then just like with the stock firmware, there's a lot of optimizations that can be done in firmware, which a lot of people don't realize. So anytime you have an SSD, like you got it when it just came out and there's a firmware update, try to update the firmware, because it more than likely will help with performance. So this is, as I said, a 2.5 inch solid state drive, which seems kind of weird that's becoming the mainstream now, right? Because we have all of these NVMe drives coming out, but this is still, I mean, there's still people for some odd reason that are rocking regular hard drives in their systems. I know there's still a lot of people out there.
So
this is the next logical step up, and we took a look at the 512 gig version of this drive, and performance is really good. The drive is rated for 565 megabytes a second read and 520 megabytes a second write. In our test, it pretty much performed right up to that standard, which is good. That's pretty much like any solid state drive we take a look at. As long as it performs up to its, you know, rated speeds, it's good. And as long as we don't run into any other issues, which we didn't with this drive, you know, it's just a good drive. It's a solid drive, and it's so surprising that it comes from HP, you know?
Yeah. As much as it's not actually sort of an HP product.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how they do that. But that's why I think it's interesting. You know, I'm glad that we took a look at it, because, you know, maybe somebody, you know, maybe they see this drive on Amazon or on Newegg and they're like, what's this HP? I'm not going to get this, you know?
Yeah.
So I think getting the word out there that this is a good product, which it is, you know, kind of sets the stage for maybe HP to be better known for certain things, or maybe to give them a shot, or at least if you're looking to go do the research and find like our review or other reviews of this product, to take a look at it, you know.
Yeah.
So
really, I mean, looking through your review, nothing really special. Just
it's just, yeah,
about your average, you know, 2.5 inch Solid state drive. Yeah. You said what sizes were they in?
It is, I think there's 256, yeah, 256, 512, and maybe close to 1 terabyte, I believe. Okay. That's available. Those are the three. So that's like the whole mainstream segment, right? So, you know, for somebody who just wants an OS drive, 256 is good. Somebody looking for a little bit more storage, or like an OS drive that would they would put their games on would be like 512. And then as you get into 1 terabyte, you're looking at, you know, maybe some games and obviously like full on storage as well. So,
Price wise.
Now the price wise is interesting. So right now it's selling for $229.95.
Seems expensive.
It's a little expensive, and it only comes with a 3-year warranty. You know, so Samsung has had their 850 Evo out for almost 2 years, slightly lower performance in a 500 gig version, but it's only $163.99 and comes with a 5-year warranty. So I think that HP needs to price this a little bit more aggressively, especially because, you know, 5-year warranty kind of gives you more peace of mind over the 3-year.
Yeah, and they have a lot of stigma to overcome. Being that they put their label on it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, this isn't a product that, like you said, there's still people on their traditional hard drives. And I don't think those people are ever going to upgrade unless they buy a new computer, right? So this product is really something that you are selling to a more educated consumer.
Yes.
And that and HP, just that's not their target market or their normal consumer, so they should probably be a little more aggressive.
Yeah, I think that even the branding on the drive could have looked cooler. I mean, we've seen other brands do that. And while, yeah, that's just something that looks cool, I mean, for enthusiasts, that's a selling point. And I
would you say 95% of all cases come with an area to display your solid state drive?
Yeah, every new case that's come out has an area to display SSDs. And I think having something that looked a little bit cooler, or even, I mean, I know it's a lot more complicated to do this, but even like making like an HP SSD logo, something cool other than the normal, you know, HP logo that everybody knows is kind of like blah, you know.
I mean, you gotta do something. This is kind of like, I feel like the solid state market is sort of like getting into like gaming peripherals, you know, like it's highly competitive. There's a lot of products to choose from. You gotta set yourself, you don't just like make one and suddenly you're there, you know.
Yeah, and I think that HP had SSDs before, and they were very, very mainstream, and obviously we didn't cover any of them. Yeah. You know, but this is good components matched with really good firmware and good performance. Like, it's a good drive. It's a drive that, you know, if it was priced lower and more competitively with the Samsung drive, I mean, this is a good choice. It really is. It's just, it's HP, and it's hard to kind of, it's like it's, they have that stigma. You know, it's not an enthusiast brand. It's not.
No, it's,
you know, it's not a Corsair.
It's what your grandma buys,
you know.
Unfortunately, you know, like that is their place. Is like it's they sell a box computer that.
Yeah, but one thing that's good about this is I assume they'll put these drives inside of their computers. You know, desktop computers, and consumers will get a really good SSD, and I think that's just good overall, anyways.
For sure.
You know, because again, as I talked about, their older SSDs weren't that great. So having something like this that's really high performance, and you know, I don't even know if HP has like a gaming desktop marker. You know what I mean? Like,
I think they have some products.
Yeah, they have some. Like, but throw these in there, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, so it's good. I enjoy doing the review because when they contacted me, I was like, You know, this is like, it's so good to, we've talked about this with a bunch of different products over the past couple of years, is you're like, what is this? And, you know, but then you get it and then you try it and then your mind's changed about it. So I kind of like that. That was pretty cool. So definitely check out that review. And again, if you are looking for a 2.5 inch SSD, this is a solid choice. Like I said, good performance across the board. So definitely check that out. And then we have basically, which is the most customizable gaming mouse I've ever reviewed, for sure, and it's the Rocket Nith, and this is mainly targeted for MMO and MOBA gamers, but it can be used as an all-around mouse too. And the big selling point of this mouse is that it has 12 buttons on the side where your thumb is. which is extreme.
It's
12 buttons just on the side. That's more than most mice have altogether. So it's made to give you so many options, but the real key part about this side button configuration is that it's completely modular. So every one of those little buttons can be removed. You can, Ooh. Instead of having 12 buttons, you can turn it into 6. You can also black out certain buttons. So maybe I want only button 1 and button 4. I can black out the middle set. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much you can do. And it works so great with their software where there's, like, certain button configurations for certain games and all that kind of stuff. It's a really cool mouse. Just besides the thumb buttons, it's super comfortable too. Like, Rocket has their mice, while they're not as popular as some other brands, they've always been very, very comfortable, which I like. And this has a 12,000 DPI laser sensor on it. It's just a good mouse, and it's. I think a lot of people are scared of these mice because, like, oh, it's so hard. It's gonna be so hard to learn. And yes, it does take time to get used to all those buttons. Like, you're not just gonna, you know, use it overnight.
Yeah, you train yourself to use it.
Yeah, but the cool thing about it is it's so customizable. You know, maybe 12 buttons is too much. You can block some out if you want. You can go down. They have larger buttons that take up two spots instead of a single. Cool. You know, it's...
Like I use a Razer Naga, which has 12 buttons, and I use it for first-person shooters, though. And it's just easy because it's, you know, it's your first 6 number keys. Well, I mean, it's your all of your number keys. But I essentially only use the first 6.
Yeah.
So, that's a sweet function to be able to just drop it down to the larger 6 buttons.
Yeah, and one thing that's really super cool is that Rocket provides the 3D printing schematics, so you can actually 3D print your own keys as well.
Oh, nice.
So if you wanted to make up some type of custom key or whatever, you can go ahead and do that yourself as well. And again, the software is great. Rocket software is, we talked about in the last podcast, different gaming software, and it's one of the best out there. Super easy to configure. You can set everything up. I mean, this is a really good mouse. And like I said, you can change a button configuration if you're playing an MMO, and then if you go back to FPS, you can switch it up, which is cool. So
yeah,
and the keys aren't all that hard to take off and reconfigure the way you want it. And it comes with an extra like pinky rest on the side as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is pretty cool too. So if you have different gaming styles for different games, you can kind of switch it out.
Yeah,
do that. So
kind of more like more styles of grip than just
So nice. The smaller grip is for like a claw style grip, whereas the larger one is more of like a palm type grip. So it just gives you more options. I basically say if you're a gamer, and there are a lot of gamers that use two different mice for gaming, they have an FPS mouse and they have like an MMO or MOBA mouse. I know a lot of people that actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this solves that problem and gives you one mouse that you're 100% used to because you're using it all the time. And it gives you the ability to have a ton of buttons for MMOs and MOBA, but then you can kind of reconfigure that to maybe one or two buttons for your FPS games. So
I think
it kind of, it solves both of those, and it's just a really great product and really cool. It is expensive, though. It's one of the most expensive mice out there. It's $103, basically $104.
Basically, it's the price of two mice.
Yeah, so that's, I think, one, if you're hardcore MMO and you need those buttons and it's really important, it's worth spending the money. And like I said, if you use two different mice for two different gaming styles, this is also a great product. I wish there was more stores, retail stores that would have this so you could go ahead and try it out yourself, because you don't know how it's going to feel and how you're going to like it until you actually try it. So that's the only thing. But it's a really great mouse. It has RGB LEDs, which I don't think aren't that important to talk about because, you know.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. It's a really great mouse. I like it. Definitely highly recommended. So definitely check out that review as well. I go into depth on a lot of the different features of that mouse, but it's a cool mouse and it was fun to review. So definitely check that out. And that brings us to Case Mod Friday. And of course, that is where we cover a build or a mod that's been completed in the community. And this week we have a completely scratch build, which I love these because you know, when you don't have a case to build off of, it just shows creativity and all that kind of stuff. So this one comes from Bird Customs, and the project is Caspasian in 3.0.
Yeah, isn't that, and, what is that? Caspasian. Wasn't that a product name?
Yeah, it's like a AMD
thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think.
I probably should have just looked it up, but yeah. Like, where is he getting that from?
I'm pretty sure that's what that is.
Yeah.
That's their big event. That's their big that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
That's their big
event.
The
last event, wasn't it?
That was their last big event where they brought out the big update of the their software, their GPU software package and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Okay. Yeah. I just know it's familiar, but
yeah. But this Scratch build, I don't even know how you would describe the look.
Honestly, it kind of like reminds me of like Toy Story. You remember like the creatures that like the kid built next door? Like they were like, they were like toys that were like mashed together. There's like a spider thing with like a doll's head on it. This kind of reminds me of that. It's just this wireframe. With all the components built into the inside of it, and it's you got to look at the pictures, I guess.
You have to look at the pictures. It's really unique and interesting, and I think it looks really good. I think, and the fact that again, the one thing I really like about Scratch builds is how they're able to build a fully functional computer that looks like something else, right? I think that's really, really cool.
This just looks like a piece of art. To me it looks kind of spider-like, right? Like that's the influence, but like it is just like this random kind of free-formed welded together frame that just looks cool. And then he uses like it looks like he had like a plastic shell that he had built for the exterior, and then he maybe decided to just melt it.
It
looks really cool the way it's all like melted and broken down looking.
Yeah, like it, and Alpha Cool water cooling.
Yeah,
We've seen that a lot. I think they're really
they're really getting out there.
Yeah, I think that a lot of these builds, I think Alpha Cool is really trying to get their products out there and sponsoring a lot of builds. So this is really, really cool.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by the choice not to water cool the GPU. The air cooler does like balance as far as like looks go, it does balance it a little bit with the white Alpha Cool radiators.
Yeah,
but I mean, you got all this awesome tubing and stuff. I like the tubing is acrylic, I believe it's acrylic. It looks like it, but it's smoked glass instead of clear.
Yeah,
with red coolant, so that looks really cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's a cool build. I like it. Ryzen build as well. So we're gonna see more of those as popularity of Ryzen continues to grow. So. Really, really cool. Definitely check that out. And I always say we have a full section of Case Mod Friday builds, so definitely go in there and look. Just tons of stuff. If you're looking for inspiration or just love PC modding and building, we have so much stuff in there for you guys to take a look at. So definitely go ahead and check that out. And that brings us to news this week. And not a whole lot of news, but some really interesting stories, I think. And the first one is rather, it could be upsetting the way... Either way you read this this article. So it looks like some information on the launch of Radeon RX Vega, which we've been talking about for months. It seems like, you know...
many, many months.
Yeah, so AMD had already stated that Radeon RX Vega will launch at SIGGRAPH 2017, which goes on from July 30th to August 3rd. This leaked schedule of sorts for AIB partners for the card gives you all the information, like the bill of materials to put together the graphics card was sent out at the beginning of June, you know, goes through all of the different evaluation testing, blah, blah, blah. But one thing that's interesting is that it says the final BIOS will come out August 2nd, which if you're mass producing a product to be available, you know, when it's announced, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Because you need to put your final BIOS on the cards before they're shipped out, even before they're mass-produced, really. So you could read this one of two ways, really. It could say that the RX Vega at SIGGRAPH is a paper launch, meaning that they announced that they gave us all the information. It's available a month later, three weeks later, or something like that.
It's not really launched.
Yeah, which is super disappointing because we've talked about it 4 months that this card needs to come out. AMD needs this card to come out. Again, we saw it at CES 2017 in January working, and you know, it was running.
Yeah.
And there's been so much hype about this product. You know, gamers want it. Everybody wants it. We want it because we want more competition on the high end, which AMD doesn't compete in currently.
Yeah.
You know, so if that's the case, that's super disappointing. Now, on the other side, it could be that at launch on August 2nd, that the RX Vega will only be reference only. The reference version of the card will be available, like we see with many launches, and then maybe a month later, I don't know how long later, we'll see custom versions of the card from the AIB partners. That seems more logical, I would hope, because again, we want this card out. It just needs to be,
It needs to be out because they're going to start. They've got a limited window here, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Before NVIDIA launches their next part, so.
Yeah, so it's hard to say what this means, but we would hope that it just means that there's no custom versions of the card available at launch, which is fine. You know, we
happens
see that.
Often.
Yeah, it does happen often, so we'll see. But
I would say that AMD has a stronger, market of additional cards than NVIDIA necessarily, like the aftermarket cards. So this is a little disappointing for that, maybe. Like, I would say, it seems to me that they sell more of these, of the, you know, non-reference cards.
Yes, I would agree.
But, I mean, just launching a product in general, that would be good for them.
Yeah, they just need to get this thing out there.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll definitely keep you guys updated. SIGGRAPH is, what, half a month away, so... So yeah, every time we say this, it just needs to come out, you know.
Yeah.
So we move from graphics cards over to CPUs, and this is just crazy to me because I have one of these processors, and I have
get this high.
Yeah. So somebody was able to overclock a Core i9-7900X 10-core processor to 6.01 gigahertz. That's 82.3% over the stock clock. That's insane.
Yeah.
Of course, this was achieved with LN2. There's probably no other way you could do it. I couldn't imagine any other way.
It would definitely melt.
So they put this through HW Bot, and it scored... I can't even read this number. it scored 12,189.52 points, making it the highest 10-core processor score ever, and the highest single processor system score ever achieved on the platform. New world records for all that kind of stuff. Crazy 1.6 volts V-core, which is like basically you're gonna melt your processor type deal. The system we're running on LN2 was negative 110 degrees Celsius, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty far down there.
Yeah, but that's just a crazy overclock.
It's crazy because it's 10 cores enabled.
Yeah, that's... Oh, man.
That would have been, I mean, it wouldn't have been record-setting for a single core at all, but it still would have been a high overclock for a single core, leaving all 10 cores enabled. I'm sure this was actually quite the session that he had to go through to get this thing running.
Yeah,
run it down? Oh, he just validated it. He didn't actually test it on anything. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's crazy though, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to see if it could run like any number crunching programs.
Yeah,
but that's probably unlikely. It'd probably crash right away.
Yeah, so it's that's cool. I like overclocking. Just shows you what you can kind of do. So And it's cool that another world record. Like every year, we have these. Who's gonna, you know, what's gonna be the highest? Blah blah blah. So that's actually really really cool. So
yeah, for sure.
Definitely definitely check out that post because you know, I remember. I don't know if you remember when we were at that party at CS and they showed all the overclockings over the years and how it they had a timeline. Yeah, it's just like every year we're just adding on to that and it's getting bigger and bigger. You know definitely. What I mean?
Who was it? Was that Gigabyte? I think it was.
It might have been Gigabyte. I forget who it was.
Or was G-Scale?
No, it wasn't G-Scale. No. I don't remember. But it was a cool thing they had at CS where they showed like when overclocking started and then like the different world records as they went up. And it's just crazy to see how far we've gone.
It's like a backdrop.
Yeah.
Because those guys were all there doing overclocking during
the day, at the event. So, yeah. So it was really, really cool. So also talking about processors, AMD came out and released the dates and prices of their upcoming Threadripper processors, which is very, very cool because usually you don't see this stuff before it launches. But again, this is like a hype train thing.
Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to do. So to start, Threadripper lineup will start with two processors. You have the 12-core Ryzen Threadripper 1920X and then the 16-core Threadripper 1950X. Both processors, since they're the X versions, they feature SMT XFR, 32 megabytes of L3 cache, and a 64-lane PCI Express root complex. So that gives you enough for three graphics cards at 16x speeds,
nice.
As well as quad channel DDR4. So these, again, these systems are going to be pretty awesome. The 1920X will be $799, and the 1950X will be $999. So $1,000, same price as the i9-7900X, which is currently. And that's only a 10-core, 20-thread. Of course, the 1950X is a 16-core, 32-thread. And they announced all this in a video, which they released, AMD released on YouTube. And the video shows both the 12-core and 16-core beat the Core i9-7900X in Cinebench the R15 multi-threaded benchmark. The 1950X was shown to be up to almost 50% faster than the i9-7900X. So
at that specific benchmark.
Yes, at that specific benchmark, you have to remember that.
I think that's the moral of the story for Ryzen parts.
Yeah. You know, so I still think
it's gonna be fast. They're all gonna be fast.
In the price,
they're competitive.
It's a competitive price.
Yeah.
Especially to get into a system where you can run three graphics cards at full speeds.
Yeah, this isn't any like hacked down Kaby Lake part that doesn't run everything. This is this is a full blown, you know, like competitive part. So.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I think that's the motherboards that come out as well are going to be cool.
I'd hope so.
You know, so they didn't give an exact date. They said early August, on shelf early August. So
how are they so much more specific for these parts, which are like announced later than Vega? Like what's going on here?
Yeah, what I think is at SIGGRAPH we'll see these launched as well as Vega.
Right, alongside the Vega announcement.
Yeah, because at early August on shelf, they're going to say, okay, here it is. Here's all the info on these parts. They're on shelf tomorrow, which would be August 3rd, or this week, which would be like August 4th, 5th, whatever. I think that would be it.
Yeah.
But they also talked about Ryzen 3, which is another interesting part. These are quad-core parts made to compete with Intel Core i3.
Yeah.
And to begin with, in that series, you'll have the Ryzen 3 1200 and the Ryzen 3 1300X. These don't have SMT, so just four threads.
Hmm.
Ryzen 3 1200 is 3.1 gigahertz with boosts up to 3.4 gigahertz. And the 1300X is 3.5 gigahertz, and it will boost up to 3.7 gigahertz. And the X version has XFR, so you have good enough cooling. It will boost even higher if that's possible with your system. Both of these will be available July 27th, so coming up.
Cool.
So again, if you're looking to get into Ryzen, maybe Ryzen 5 didn't do it for you, or it was just a little bit too expensive, These parts will be coming out, so it's something you want to stay tuned for if you're looking for something like that. So good stuff on the horizon front, I think. And Threadripper will be interesting. I'm again, before you decide if you're looking at Intel high-end desktop or AMD high-end desktop, wait till the full reviews come out. Because if you're just going off what they show you in this video, it's not going to show the whole story. So
yeah,
definitely just wait. And then talking about Intel, this is a pretty
Intel doing stupid stuff.
It's a shady story.
Yeah.
So Intel's Pentium series, they I think it's like a few years ago, they started enabling hyper threading on their Pentium dual core chips, which was awesome. Because instead of just having two cores, you had four.
And they were like, they're like beefy chips, right?
Yeah, beefy chips, very heavily overclockable. You know, great for building little machines and even semi gaming machines.
I did some decent gaming on one of those parts.
Yeah,
I did a pretty good overclock. I didn't go too far, and I could game pretty well on that thing.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is so much gaming now doesn't rely heavily on CPU. So you have a decent enough CPU, but your GPU is pretty good, you know, much better. You can get away with something like that. So,
buy a cheaper board, and the biggest part of these is they're super cheap. What, $65 bucks?
Yep.
Right around there. So, like, you can save yourself a couple hundred on CPU and board cost and throw that into a faster GPU, and I think you'd actually probably wind up with a faster system. For gaming.
Yeah, for gaming. I mean, I think it's a good thing. So I think a lot of people have done that.
Yeah.
And sure. these Pentium chips are flying off the shelves. I mean, they're $64.
You can't beat that.
They're two core, four thread, Kaby Lake microarchitecture, three megabytes of L3 cache.
The fact that it has an L3 cache is pretty cool too.
Yeah, and clock speeds of 3.5 gigahertz, which, and again, highly overclockable, so you could easily probably get up to 4 gigahertz.
At 4.5, easy.
Yeah. You know, and then they have, Intel has their Core i3 dual core parts, which are pretty much double the price.
Yeah, for like nothing more.
Yeah, so like the Core i3 parts, the cheapest one is $117. Basically almost double the price. And it gives you two Kaby Lake cores, four threads, the same 3 megabytes L3 cache, slightly higher clock speeds.
That's fine. All they did was set it higher stock.
Yeah, and it for twice the money though.
Oh, so, it does have integrated graphics though, right?
Yeah, but it, I mean,
did the Pentium doesn't? I don't think
it does not.
Okay, yeah, but who cares? Honestly, who cares?
So 400 megahertz bump in speed, basically that's what it is.
Yeah.
And for double the price, I don't think it's worth it. I think you get the Pentium chip, and I think it's what a lot of people have done. So what Intel is doing, because this is kind of their i3 sales, I can assume, aren't where they want to be, and this is probably one of the culprits because of that. Because I know a lot of people have covered these Pentium processors and how you can actually build a gaming system with them. They basically, Intel will be scaling down the production of the Pentium G4560 to basically cripple its availability and force consumers to go for the higher priced Core i3 parts.
Lame.
Shady.
Not only are they doing that, but they've also raised the prices. Have you checked lately?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, the 4560 right now is up to like about right around $82 to $84 on Amazon. It's sold out on Newegg, so yeah, they're already doing work on that
front. Yeah, so I mean, that's just shady.
I think at $84 or $82, it's still probably a better choice. Because you know you're still saving $30, and it's the same thing.
Yeah,
so. For now, that's still the thing, but yeah, you're probably not going to be able to get them.
Yeah, it's probably why they're sold out on Newegg. If you're looking to do something like this, now's the time to get it. Or like look on forums, somebody's selling one. You know,
the thing is, on the forums, these are going to become like sought after parts, and you're not going to be able to find them, I would guess.
Yeah.
You're going to end up paying good money for these soon.
Yeah, so get them while you can.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. So Man, Intel's just disappointing us this year.
Yeah.
But talking about Intel and X299, two big motherboard manufacturers released their flagship motherboards for the X299 platform. A lot of these we saw at Computex, but they're finally available and we get the full details. So the first one is the MSI X299 X-Power Gaming AC. This is basically MSI's X-Power line and gaming line put together into one massive motherboard that has anything that you want. Name it, it has it. And this the bottom heatsink on this, the PCH heatsink, looks like the arc reactor from Iron Man, which is super cool. And I can assume those are RGB LEDs, which they have to be. So that's really cool. This looks to be EATX. It has to be. It's just so big.
100% EATX.
Like I said, any feature you want, this board pretty much has it. A lot of overclocking stuff on this board as well. You can see the overclocking buttons that are actually right there. So you can do that stuff on the board. Power and reset on the board. Looks like three M.2 slots, but it also comes with a PCI Express M.2 riser that has two more, a total of five M.2 slots on this board. So you don't even need the SATA ports that are on this thing, which you do get a lot of those as well.
And it comes with heat shields, thermal shields for all the onboard M.2s as well. That's cool.
And it has dual Intel LANs as well as wireless AC. And it comes with little antennas that you kind of put on top of your computer. Oh, man, this thing has everything.
Yeah.
Literally everything. It's so sexy. Really, really cool board. USB 3.1 Gen 2, Type-C, front port Type-C. All kinds of stuff on this thing. Man, this thing's just nice. I don't know if they released the price, but it's got to be up there. It's probably
$499,
I would think, of something like that. 14 phase power design, military class 6 components, like everything.
Yeah, it doesn't have like built-in water cooling though.
True.
So that's one thing that might lower the price a little. And I wouldn't say that the LEDs are necessarily over at the level of some of the other boards.
I would also agree.
So I would say you might actually be more towards four.
Okay, maybe like $399 for this. Let me see if it's available.
Just check. So you can run five M.2s on this thing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And get good bandwidth as well because you're on X299.
Oh, wait, no. It didn't come up. The X299 Gaming Pro Carbon AC, which is closely related to this, is $349.
Okay.
Gotcha. And that's an ATX board with far less features. So I'm thinking maybe $449.
Yeah, that could be.
Because that's the only thing that's available.
Could be the sweet spot there.
Yeah. So
it's a nice. I like the matte black PCB and just the gray. It really lends itself to being very mod friendly.
Yeah.
Color scheme wise.
Oh yeah, I like this board. It's nice.
Yep.
So definitely check it out. I don't believe it's available. I couldn't find it when I just searched. So
you should have been able to find it pretty easy, I would think.
Yeah. So it's not available just yet. But if you're looking for a really high end board, definitely check a look at this one. It has like literally everything you want. So
if you're looking for a board that you can't have, how about?
Well, you can have it. You can have it.
You just gotta go to Asia to buy it.
If you live in the UK or if you live in the Asian. Market, you can find this board. So Colorful also announced their flagship, which is the iGame X299 Vulcan X. And one thing that's really cool is you have the choice of white or black.
Yeah.
So you have white PCB with white accents or a black PCB with black accents. The only thing I don't like about the white one is the RAM slots and they're black.
The expansion slots, yeah.
Yeah, they're.
That would be probably a first.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a board with white, like all the plastic bits.
No, I don't think. But this is a nice high end board as well. I don't think colorful. Their motherboards aren't as fine tuned as say Asus, MSI, and Gigabyte. But you have a lot there. You have two M.2s on there, six SATA, 6 gig ports, USB 3.1, Just a, like, again, really nice looking board. The white PCB I love. On anything. Really nice design here. I don't know about the if there's RGBs on this. I don't think
this doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I don't think they've gotten to that point yet. One thing that's really interesting, if you look at the photo of the boards, they have an M.2 position beside the DDR4 slots. But I don't think I've ever seen M.2 position there.
Where? Oh, I see it now.
Yeah, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it's a little different. Yeah. Kind of by the heatsink.
Yeah, it's a little different. But
still, a little odd on an EATX board that they only have two, though.
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell me there wasn't space when we've seen it on other boards.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put all these components, and especially if they're not making use of the back of the board, which some people aren't as much, yeah. To put certain components in certain places. So,
yeah.
But it's the one thing I really like. I said that I liked is that you have the white version, the black version. It's kind of cool. I don't think we've ever seen a company release, at least on initial release, one board and two color options, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever seen that.
No,
so.
I don't think so.
And we've seen MSI do their Arctic versions of their boards, but those were available later. They didn't come at launch, so. But like,
yeah,
I guess.
It's just like a dual launch.
Yeah. So, but like I said, and Derek said, sadly, if you're in the United States, you really can't get colorful products, which is kind of sad. So.
Yeah. Just don't get excited.
They need to open a U.S. branch, I think.
Yeah, that's probably not complicated at all, so they should do that.
Yeah, not at all. we'll move on from that to something that more, I think this hits home with a lot of people, you especially, because you have been to Best Buy lately and bought things.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time I bought something at Best Buy. But, you know, if you're a general consumer and you are buying a new TV or, you know, anything really, if you're not one to order online, which a lot of people aren't, my parents still are freaked out about buying things online. you walk into Best Buy and you buy something. And the good part about Best Buy is they have the Geek Squad. So if you need help setting up your PC or setting up something, a smart home or, getting your TV installed, they'll go do it. And that's one of the good things about Best Buy is that they have their home installations and all that kind of stuff. Because if you order online, it comes to your house and you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
But Amazon has just launched. It launched... in 9 markets currently, with more expanding, is the 9 markets are Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Jose. And it's an in-home tech support service, much like Geek Squad, offering in-home installations, training. They're going to offer free training on all Amazon products like Alexa and things like that, so all their smart home stuff. As well as other, as it ramps up, other things. And I think that's, what we talked about it earlier this week, is it takes away a very competitive advantage that Best Buy does have.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't see it that way, but that's because I would never use Geek Squad.
Well, yeah. But I think if you're somebody who, say maybe Amazon does have a better price, which a lot of times they do.
They really don't anymore, though.
I think sometimes
Best Buy has had to become competitive. Sometimes, certainly.
Best Buy does have the price match as well, so.
Yeah. What you'll find is that Best Buy just won't carry things that Amazon does, and they're cheaper, right? So, like, those are the things that I think that you're going to buy for sure on Amazon. Because, like, why would you go buy, like, a brand name HDMI cable from Best Buy for $60 when you can go on Amazon and get the same thing electrically for $10, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's sort of the thing. But if you're talking about a Samsung TV A, and then you go to, on Amazon for $400, and then you go to Best Buy, and it's the same exact TV, it's going to be $400 at Best Buy.
Yeah, probably. I think that. But I think one of the big things is that, I wouldn't. If I was somebody who didn't know how to install something, I would have to go to Best Buy because they would install it for me, right?
But sure.
If I. Now that Amazon has this service, so I'm just like, I'm buying all my other things that I normally order on Amazon. I'm just going to order the TV because I know they'll come and install it now. And the big thing about this story is, Geek Squad has had a history of horrible customer service. There's been stories since Geek Squad's inception about horrible service, ripoffs, all kinds of stories.
Always,
You Google Geek Squad, whatever, there's bad stories all over. And Amazon is a customer service focused company. That's their big thing. It doesn't matter. I've had problems, you know, with stuff not getting delivered on time. They always make it better. They're a customer service driven company. That's how they've been from the start. They're Jeff Bezos' book on it, you know. So I think that that's where they possibly will have a competitive advantage, just for the fact that, you know, their techs aren't going to be dicks like the Geek Squad people are. At least I wouldn't think. Yeah, you would hope.
What it's going to be, though, is they're just going to be contracting with local. I guarantee they'll just be local, you know, technology companies or whatever.
Yeah, but I think they'll also have certain things in place to make customer service a priority, I think.
I'm sure that they'll have a program. You know, and it'll be a tightly run program. But you're still talking about, you know, this random guy that lives around you, not somebody coming from Amazon somewhere.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And they do enter the market in a position of big power over Best Buy. Obviously, they're a bigger company, and they're in more markets than Best Buy. Best Buy is like United States. In Canada, I think that's it. Maybe in a couple other places, but... and Best Buy is in Mexico as well, but in other places like the UK and stuff where Best Buy doesn't exist, I think this is it's going to be interesting. And when the story hit, Best Buy shares did take a drop.
Did they?
Yeah, because Geek Squad does make up 9% of Best Buy's overall business, which is a lot, and that's 9%, that's up from 6% from last year, so that's a part of their business.
Yeah. It's a chunk for a company that can't really afford that. I mean, they were nearly bankrupt like 3 years ago.
Yeah, so that's it's an interesting thing. It just seems like Amazon's just taken over.
Still not like making money though. That's what's funny.
Yeah, but it just seems like they're getting into all these markets. Like, I honestly thought Alexa was stupid when it came out, but I forget the last numbers of how many people have it. And then in this story they said the Prime service has 80 million U.S. households. I mean, that's a lot of already Amazon customers that you have. Know what I mean? It's interesting, you know. Again, this doesn't really for us, we do our own installations even if we don't know how to do it, I feel.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, but I think for a good amount of, especially Americans, I think that this is going to be a big deal. So we'll see. We shall see.
Yes.
But I hope Best Buy sticks around, because you still need that brick and mortar store where you can go pick something up the day you need it.
To me, it's a matter of Amazon won't take back like a large TV because you've just got a couple of dead pixels. There's a very strict guidelines on what you can actually return to them. And it's going to cost you when you return something like that for that reason. So there, I just see it as Best Buy is less of a risk when you're buying something that's several thousand dollars.
Okay.
Personally.
All right. Well.
It helps. I'm like 2 miles from Best Buy too, so.
Yeah.
It's not an issue to just run.
So that's the thing, is if you live in a market, especially when it comes to PC components.
Yeah,
I live in Pittsburgh. We don't have a Fry's anywhere remotely close. It's like a 3-hour drive. And Best Buy literally is the only place that you can buy PC components.
Which is, I never buy anything PC related.
Yeah, and they're very limited there as well.
And overpriced, extremely overpriced on the PC side.
Yeah, so I mean that's a thing, and but it's interesting, and we'll just have to see as the year and the months go on to see how this actually takes effect, and to see if these horror stories that we've heard of Geek Squad happen on the Amazon side too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll have to see, but I'd say it's a good move on Amazon's part, and we'll just see kind of what happens.
Yeah, I just hope that it's not an overreach. Probably not. They probably built the infrastructure for it.
Yeah, I think
that, because it's got to be something like that. You got to keep a close hand on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So moving from that to esports, which is massive as it's been the past couple years, and Overwatch is going to have its own league, and this is the first time we're going to see a real gaming league with teams based in major cities around the world. So that just like they're basically designing it like any other major sports league, where you have different teams in different cities, so they have that local fan base, which is kind of interesting, and
it's very interesting.
Yeah, and but the thing that's really cool about this league so far is that big name people are getting in on it, so it's kind of legitimizing it, I think. They announced. Go ahead.
Well, it's especially interesting that they are getting in on it, because this is actually an extremely expensive league to get into.
Yes.
The cost of entry is millions of dollars to become involved. So the fact that you have these guys that know what it is to sink huge amounts of money into sports teams, like NBA teams, like, says that this is probably a legitimate thing.
Yeah.
This is not just a flash in the pan.
Yeah. So the first seven teams were announced, and their owners. New York Patriots owner Robert Kraft will be owning the team in New York, and or no, I'm sorry, in Boston. And New York Mets chief operating officer Jeff Wilpon will be owning the team in New York. Andy Miller, he's the co-owner of the Sacramento Kings of the NBA. He's also chairman of I'm not reading correctly today. NRG Esports. He will own the San Francisco-based team. Noah Winston will be owning the team in Los Angeles, and he's CEO of the esports franchise Immortals. And he has funding from one of the owners of the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. And there's a team in Miami, and there's a team in Seoul, Korea, obviously. And all of these owners are big-name people. They're not just people that we haven't heard of. It's kind of cool. I think that this is either going to bring esports to the next level. We've already seen it come to the next level, where we're seeing Overwatch games on ESPN and or League of Legends and all these big money things. But one thing that's interesting about this league is it's built like a traditional professional sports league, which we've never seen before in esports ever. We've seen countries, when we go to these major championships, we see USA team, stuff like that. But just for cities to have a regional team. And it's going to be interesting seeing the television deals that will go along with this, whether I assume they're going to do some type of television deal besides Twitch, as a way to broadcast these games.
Seems like they have to. They have to at that level.
And it's huge for esports. Esports is expected to, as a whole, expected to make around $700 million this year, and easily double by 2020, which is only not that long away. And the league could pull in more than $100 million annually. This league
by itself.
Yeah, just by itself.
Dang.
And I think if anybody's going to do it, Blizzard has always been really good with their products, whether it's the World of Warcraft and everything like that, and they have the money, and the game is built correctly for esports. Like, that Overwatch was built for esports. Like, that's why it was built. So I think that's this is going to be really cool, and it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I'd love to see Overwatch on ESPN, or if it's local to you, if you had a base team, maybe even on your local station.
Yeah.
It lends identity, because it regionalizes it. It gives you more of a reason to pay attention.
Oh yeah. It's cool to see. I'm excited for this league. I'll probably tune into some of the matches and things like that. And I really like Overwatch because it's more of like, while it is like a hero-based game, it's more FPS style, which I like because I'm not a fan of League of Legends and Dota.
Right.
But Overwatch is the same, sort of the same concept. It's a little different, but it's more of like FPS.
Yeah, it's more of a shooter, yeah.
Yeah, so I like that.
There's it's kind of, not only is it, I don't know, like, but skill-based, right? In that it's a shooter, but yes. Then it's also strategy-based, so.
Yes, because obviously each different hero has a different set of skills and things that you can do, and they...
Yeah.
You have to play as a team to use certain characters to do certain things. It's a fun game. I played it. So yeah, man, that's awesome for esports. I like it. Very cool. Yes. And our last story of the day has to do with, I guess, kind of with esports, but more of gaming, is that Logitech acquired Astro Gaming for $85 million. Astro Gaming, basically their main thing was gaming headsets, and specifically gaming headsets for console gamers. They sponsor many console-based esports teams. Most console players that I know prefer these headsets. They look awesome. They feel awesome. Their performance is really, really good. So Logitech decided to go out and buy them. Now we don't know how the buyout is going to work, whether Astro products are going to be rebranded as Logitech or they're going to keep them as a separate brand. I don't think they're going to be brought in. I don't think they're going to be brought into the Logitech G brand, because the G brand is PC gaming specifically, but they could. I don't know.
Yeah.
I
think it'd be somewhat of a mistake to rebrand. I think maybe you put Logitech in the titles of things, and maybe you put a Logitech symbol on the headsets somewhere, but I don't think you rebrand entirely.
Yeah, because I think that once, you know, you have this big brand, this name that's built itself out, you don't want to get rid of that brand recognition that it already has.
There's a lot of value in brands, in a branding.
Yeah.
And that's throwing away a lot, especially a brand that has a lot of respect, right?
Yeah.
You're already, it's a big risk buying a company like this when you're somebody like Logitech that, well, Logitech has a good reputation, I would say, a fair reputation. It's not a reputation of the highest quality parts.
Correct.
So it's a big risk that you're going to already lose a lot of consumers that formerly would have bought an Astro product simply because they're afraid that the manufacturing is going to change.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful when you're Logitech in this situation that you don't alienate the former consumer base.
Yeah, I think the smart thing would be to maybe call this Logitech Astro, and Astro is the console gaming
line.
Whatever. Yeah. Just like we have Logitech G, and the G series is all gaming, you know, high-end gaming accessories.
Yeah.
Because Logitech is mostly, you know, mainstream consumer base with all of their other stuff. And just like UE, I mean, UE is Logitech.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, almost every person I know, like, has a UE speaker, because they just...
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that if I'm Logitech, I'm either going to call this Logitech Astro, or just leave it Astro Gaming, and we own it. I mean...
Yeah.
I
don't think you even want to mess with manufacturing, I think, or design. Just leave it separate. Get the synergies that you can from purchasing and distribution, but let them be themselves so that... Because the internet figures out, you know, who's building what where.
Yeah.
And reviewers, and they talk about it, and that's where you destroy the name.
Yeah.
Is when people start to think that you're doing bad things with it.
Exactly. So I guess that's great for Astro if they wanted to be acquired, you know. And I guess we'll just see, you know, as time goes by what they actually do with the company, so.
Yeah, seems like a good deal for Astro. $85 million is a decent chunk of change.
Oh yeah, that's no, you know, it's not bad at all.
It's some spending money.
Yes, for sure, for sure. So that rounds out the news for this week, and then we'll talk about we have coming up next week in the gaming space, which actually all of these products are actually gaming related that we have next week. So first is a new product from HyperX. I can't talk about it because it's under NDA.
Nice.
But the review is going to launch tomorrow, so check out the site and you'll definitely hear a lot about it. Next one is ADATA's SX950. This is their gaming solid-state drive. So if you're this is targeting at gamers, you know, this is the drive.
I'm curious what makes this a gaming solid-state drive.
Probably
the sticker.
Yeah, I think that's ADATA has a hard time, I think, selling their drives. And okay, this has higher performance components in it, as well as I would say game optimized firmware.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Well, yeah. See, I'm curious to see where that comes in. Maybe there is a benefit to be had.
And I think a lot of, you know, again, ADATA and a lot of companies are, because gaming's so big, they want to say this is a gaming drive when, you know, it can operate as anything. But
yeah, that's
saying it's gaming will make it sell. You know, yeah, if you're running games, you should have them on an SSD so they load faster.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. So, but it does come with a 6-year warranty. That's pretty high. Anything over 5 is anything over 3 really in the SSD space is great. So having a 6-year warranty, 560 megabytes a second read, 530 megabytes a second write. It's just, you know, we'll see. Just check out the review this upcoming week and you'll see what I think about it.
Cool.
So we have that, and then finally we have Epic Gears. I can't even say the name of this product. You want to try it?
Melodious.
Yeah. I guess we'll call Melodious. That is their in-ear gaming headset. So basically it's a set of, I guess you call them earbuds, that are made for gaming, and they're actually really cool. They so far they sound really good, and they have a little detachable mic on them. So that mic is detachable.
Yeah.
So if you're obviously not gaming, you know, you're at the gym, you don't want that in because that looks weird.
What?
you know. So these seem to be pretty cool. Definitely stay tuned for my full review. But it's a cool little headset. We haven't seen that many gaming headsets like this. Most of them are the big over ear type headsets.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a set of earbuds with a microphone attachment.
You know, a lot of people do prefer earbuds over headphones sometimes. I mean, just
sometimes
the type of people
depends on the duration.
Yeah, that's true. So I will be doing some. I did some gaming the other night. I actually played Fortnite. I haven't played in a long time. I played it for a few hours with these. And that's one big thing why people do prefer the over ear compared to the in ear, is because long periods of time with earbuds just is not pleasant.
It tends in the most to part, so annoy the ear.
Yeah, so I will be testing all of that with this really cool set and interesting. Epic Gear does interesting things. Sometimes not the smartest, but very interesting.
At least they're trying.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes, and that's our reviews that we have coming up for next week. So that brings us to the end of the podcast, and we usually talk about what's going on and what we did this week, and did you do anything fun and exciting?
Not really. I watched some movies I didn't think were good. And let's see here. Oh, well, Game of Thrones, that's tonight, right?
I haven't watched that show in 3 years.
Believe so. Okay, well, I'm sure we've got some listeners who have.
Yes.
Who are part of the 99%, the Bobbisant. Yes.
I just, I tend to not watch shows that are that long. And the problem is that I'm so behind now, I feel like I'll binge watch it, and then I'll just won't get work done.
Yeah, no, you'd need a good week.
Yeah, because I think I stopped, what season is it now?
Like 5 or 6.
I think I stopped on season 3, so I have a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah.
you know, but no, it's great. I mean, from what, it was an amazing show from when I watched it. I don't even know why I stopped watching it, but that's exciting.
Yeah. I also saw today the first little photo spot for the upcoming Steven Spielberg movie, well, adaptation of Ready Player One.
Oh, nice.
Which I love the book.
We talked about the book on the podcast, and I wrote it down to go get the book, and I never did, so...
Put it back on your list. I mean, dude, yeah. It's one of those things that's, as a gamer, you just have to.
Yeah.
But I'm a little concerned from this first screen.
Didn't look good.
They did. It looks like they're struggling, so we'll see. But yeah. It was cool to be reminded that they're doing the project because it's a nightmare. It's a branding nightmare. The book is just full of... What makes it so good, I think, is all of these references to, like, 80s and 90s games and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And in pop culture. And it makes it just a nightmare to, like, make as a movie because you got to cover all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. In a book, you have... You don't need licensing in a book to use those references. So
yeah. So
yeah. So
it'll be
cool to watch. See it develop.
Well, I didn't really watch anything.
Yeah. What'd you do,
Bob?
Nothing.
I went wakeboarding.
All right.
That's kind of what I do in the summer.
Yeah.
I do think computer stuff and I wakeboard, basically. Gotcha. So you know, just catching up, getting a lot of stuff done, getting the X299 system kind of up and running.
Nice.
So not this week, but probably next week you'll see at least one X299 motherboard review. And working on a little project, a little build I'm doing over here, which I'm not talking about just yet. So
gotcha.
So yeah, so that's what's going on, guys. Definitely stay tuned next week so we have three cool gaming products for you guys to take a look at. And I'll hopefully have a couple more YouTube videos done as well. Those just take so long to do. So I'll hopefully have some of those for you next week as well. And you can actually watch this podcast or listen to this podcast on YouTube. We upload all of those usually a day after the podcast goes on, all of your other podcasting things. So if you're like a YouTube person, you can actually listen to it on YouTube as well. So we have
it
there. But as always, we have our full show notes page that's linked not only on YouTube, but on everything. So you can go through, and as we talk about the reviews or some of the news stories, you can click through and get all the details and, you know, go in depth if you really want to. And on everything, is you just type in Think Computers, all one word, on your podcasting software and YouTube, and you'll go ahead and find us. So until next week, guys, catch you guys later.